favorite story or a favorite group of stories. But if Atlanta were going to choose a favorite group of stories, they would probably be the Brer Rabbit and Brer Fox and Brer Bear stories, because Mr. Harris, who collected the stories and wrote them down so that those of us who are reading now could read them. Up until the time that he wrote them down, they had been oral history. And nobody knows really where they started. But since civilization began in Africa and speech began in Africa, there are anthropologists who tell us that the Africans were the first storytellers, and that that was the very first form of entertainment. They had music and they had dancing, but they used that in religious ceremonies. But probably at night, after the sun went down, they'd crawl in the cave because they didn't know how to build houses at that time, and sit around the fire. They did have fire by then, and that way they could sit and contemplate and have time for stories. And the storyteller was a very special and separate person from the rest. He didn't have to go work. He could stay home and dream up stories. And since the stories, similar stories, are found all over the world, in Europe, the American Indians had stories that are very similar to the Brer Rabbit stories. I always give Brer Rabbit top billing because he's my favorite dog. And I think it's so wonderful that way back then, at the very beginning of civilization, the storyteller knew to use symbolism. And that means that you use a rabbit, maybe when you're talking about somebody in the group who plays tricks on everybody. But you don't want to use this man's name or this woman's name because he or she might get mad. So you use the rabbit, and it's sort of a way to play tricks. And that's what Brer Rabbit did, and that's what he did this particular time. When one morning in the early spring, Brer Fox was out for a walk, and he was enjoying the beautiful weather and the beautiful trees that were putting out leaves. And he got to walking and walking and walked a little further than he had ever walked before. And he got to the juniper tree, and when he did, he paused to rest. And he came around the curve and he stopped there. And while he's standing there resting and looking, he looks and there's a clearing that he never had seen before. And he thought a thought, and that thought was, oh, that looks like it would make a good goober patch. Everybody know what a goober is?
Peanuts.
Good. Peanuts. Lots of folks don't know what goobers are. Peanuts. So he got busy. And he got him a stick, and he worried up the ground, and he got the peanuts, and he planted them. And then he waited, and the sun shone just enough, and the rain rained just enough, and it wasn't long before the little leaves were popping up above the ground. And then they were getting bigger, and they were turning into vines, and that means what? That the peanuts are growing under the ground. Well, it was time to start checking on them. The vine got pretty big, and he would go over every single morning real, real early. And he'd pull up one and taste it. And sometimes it tasted so good that even though they weren't really quite ripe, he'd pull up two or three and eat them. Well, they started getting so good until he got an idea that he better put a fence around them, because he was scared that Brer Rabbit was going to be coming along and he would build a fence so Brer Rabbit would know that this was his goober patch. So that's what he did. He got some stobs and he stobbed up around the edges of that peanut patch, and then he took some kudzu vine and he wound it around and around, and he had a fence. And Brer Rabbit was supposed to know to stay out. But unbeknownst to Brer Fox, Brer Rabbit had been coming down and checking too. And the peanuts were getting good, and nobody loved peanuts like Brer Rabbit. Well, the better they got, the less careful Brer Rabbit was, because he would come down and he would forget to be careful. Now, when he started out picking peanuts or pulling peanuts, he'd start over here, and then the next morning he'd go over here. And then the next morning he'd go over there, and that way he didn't have any pattern of where he was eating, so Brer Fox wouldn't notice. Well, he forgot to be careful. And he ate so much that Brer Fox noticed when he got there, after Brer Rabbit had left, that somebody besides him was checking on the goober patch. and he allows us how. He knows who that is, and he sets a trap. He gets a piece of kudzu vine, and he pulls it down out of the juniper tree, and he weights it down with a rock. And he goes on home knowing that the next morning when he gets there, he's going to have that thief that's been stealing the peanuts from him. So the next morning, old Brer Rabbit was so excited. Here he comes, lifted it around the curve, forgot to be careful of himself, and right in that trap. And it grabbed him right up under the forearms, and it jerked him up in the tree. Well, first he's scared he gonna fall. And then he's scared he wasn't gonna fall. But now Brer Rabbit had a policy that he lived by. And that is, if you were little and without much strength, you use your head instead of your foot. And so that's what he did. He called on his head and he said, "Oh, head, I need me an idea baby." And sometimes the idea would come, and other times it took a while. Well, this was one of those times it was going to take a while. So he pulled that noose down from under his arms and put it down under his bottom, made him a little swing, and he started just looking around, oh, and admiring the scene, just like that picture over there. He could see things he never had seen before, never had been that high up, and he's admiring all the bees and the birds that were way up high there. And all of a sudden his idea came to him just like that, because what he heard was dun, 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 dun. And can't nobody sing off key like Brer Bear. Well, Brer Rabbit was watching for him, and sure enough, here he came singing around the curve there. And Brer Rabbit sings out to him, "Morning to you, Brer Bear. Beautiful morning, ain't it?" And Brer Bear didn't see anybody, and he's looking around. And Brer Rabbit called to him. He says, "Up here in the tree, Brer Bear. Brer Bear had to back up, get a good bead on him, and he said, "Brer Rabbit, what in the world are you doing up there in the tree?" Brer Rabbit said, "I've been hired to keep intruders out of this goober patch, and I'm making $1 a minute. Well, Brer Bear just couldn't imagine that. And he says, "Ooh-wee, that's a lot of money, Brer Rabbit. How you say you doing that?" He said, "I've been hired to keep intruders out of this goober patch, and I've been here since dawn, and I pretty much got all the money that I need. How about you, Brer Bear? You got all the money you need?" And Brer Bear said, "No." He said, "Well, how about you taking off of this job?" Brer Bear said, "Oh, I don't want to take your job." Well, Brer Rabbit keeps after him, telling him about all the children he's got at home that he needs to be doing for. And Brer Bear changes his mind. So what he did was reach up and pull the trap down. Brer Rabbit had called it a swing. He said, "If you'll pull this little swing down and make this part bigger, then you can get in." So that's what they did. He reached up there, helped Brer Rabbit out. They made the noose bigger, and Brer Bear got in it. And when they turned the loose, it went up in the tree, not as high as it had been when little old scrawny Brer Rabbit was in there, but it did go on up in the tree. And there was Brer Bear looking around, enjoying the scenery. And right now, Brer Rabbit has gone and hid behind a bush, because he knows that it's not going to be long before Brer Fox is going to be along. And he doesn't want to miss that. That's going to be something to see. So he has to sit over there and shove his fist in his mouth to keep from laughing. Well, sure enough, he was right. Around the curve here comes Brer Fox, lippity-lip. Those peanuts were getting so good, and he could see that his trap had been sprung, and he could just hardly wait to get there. And he comes skidding around the corner and sees Brer Bear. And he says, "Brer Bear, what in the world are you doing up there?" Well, Brer Bear could tell from the tone of Brer Fox's voice that he had probably made the wrong mistake. And he tried to make it right. He said, I'm making a dollar a minute. Brer Fox says, you're making foolishness is all you're doing. And so he starts, he's going to get Brer Bear out of the trap, and they're going to go after Brer Rabbit. Well, while all this is going on, Brer Rabbit has sneaked on across the road, and he went on down the way and hid in little old frog pond that's there by the side of the road. Well, he's laid his ears back, left nothing but his eyeballs and his nose sticking out, and when Brer Fox and Brer Bear get through with their conflict, Brer Fox goes down that way, and here comes Brer Bear right by the frog pond. Well, he sees out of the corner of his eyes those eyes over there in that frog pond, and he says, morning to you, Brer Frog. And Brer Rabbit says in his best frog voice, morning, Brer Bear. Brer Bear says, Brer Frog, have you seen Brer Rabbit go by here? Brer Rabbit say, yeah, just a little while ago, he went that same way you heading, Brer Bear. And so Brer Bear took off like a mad mule, and Brer Fox done gone. And Brer Bear gone. So Brer Rabbit just crawls out of the frog pond, shakes his little scrawny self off, and just goes on home like any other day. I am from Atlanta, and Atlanta's gotten to be quite a big city now. But it used to be a small city where most people knew each other, and life was sweet and gentle. And in those early days, this man moved from the country where he had grown up in his grandmother's home. And his grandmother was a wonderful seamstress, and everybody knew about her beautiful work that she did and sought her out to make clothes for her. And she used to say to this man, this now man, when he was a little boy, every time you go out this door, you advertise yourself. You advertise exactly how you feel about yourself. So make sure you look the way you want people to think about you. And so he was very mindful of that for the rest of his life. And he would always make sure that his hair was just right, that his face was clean, and his clothes were at least neat, if not all fancy. So, because this was during the Depression. So he moved to Atlanta, and he decided that he would help other people advertise themselves in the way that they wanted to. So he opened a tailoring shop. And his wife worked with him to help get the shop just exactly right. Every bolt of goods was just exactly right on the shelves. The color was just right for the walls. The floor was just exactly right. They had hired just the right people. And finally, on Sunday afternoon, before they were to open the following Monday, he invited his wife down for one last inspection. And as she stood there and looked at it, she decided that it was absolutely perfect, and then she looked at her husband to tell him that, and she really looked at him, and she said, oh, Taylor, I can't believe it. We've been being so very careful and so particular about this shop that we have overlooked the fact that you are beginning to look quite ragged in that coat that you're wearing. And so they decided that perhaps if they both worked on it, that by tomorrow, when the grand opening was to take place, they could have a really elegant coat for him to wear. So that's what they did. They got busy. She helped him choose a beautiful soft gray wool. And then they chose gray silk for the lining and beautiful buttons made out of real bone. Nothing but the best for this coat, because after all, he was going to be advertising his tailor shop.
So they measured and they cut and they sewed. And by time for the store to open the next morning, you never saw a more elegant coat than the tailor was wearing. He wore it here. He wore it there. He wore it everywhere, and everywhere he went, people would say, "Oh, Taylor, what an elegant coat. You look so smart." And years went by. He was brushing the coat one morning, which he did every day. And he noticed that it was beginning to show some wear around the bottom. So he laid it out on the table, and he decided that checking the points of wear was just around the bottom so that he could make a very short coat out of it, the kind that comes about to your fingertips. So he got busy, and he measured, and he cut, and he sewed, and when he was through, he had a very handsome coat. A short coat, but a very handsome coat. And he wore it here, he wore it there, he wore it everywhere, and everywhere he wore it, people would say, "Oh, Taylor, what a smart short coat. You look so debonair." So the years went by, and one day when he was brushing the coat, he noticed that it was worn all on the sleeves. The sleeves were beginning to look kind of shiny. And that if he were indeed going to advertise himself, he would need to do something other than wear this particular coat. And so he put it out on the table, and he measured it, and he saw that he had just enough wool left there to make a vest. And so he took it apart, and he measured, and he cut, and he sewed a very handsome vest, double-breasted with brass buttons. And he wore it here. He wore it there, and everywhere he wore it, people said, "Oh, Taylor, what a smart vest you have." So the years went by, and one morning when he was brushing it, which he did every day, he noticed that it was beginning to wear all around the edges, all around the sleeves of the armholes. And he took it apart, and he measured, and he saw that he had enough wool there to make a very smart cap. And by then, the tailor's hair was beginning to get a little thin on top, and he could use a handsome cap to keep his head warm. So he measured, and he sewed, and he made a very handsome cap, and he wore it here, he wore it there, and everywhere he wore it, people said, "Oh, Taylor, what a smart cap." Until one day, he was brushing his cap, which he did every day, and he noticed that it was beginning to show wear. And so he took it apart to see what he could do, and he found that he had just enough to make a very handsome bow tie. Now, back then, bow ties were bigger than they are now most of the time. So he measured, and he cut, and he sewed, and he made a very handsome bow tie, and he wore it here. He wore it there. He wore it everywhere. And everywhere he wore it, people said, "Oh, Taylor, what a smart bow tie you wear." And he enjoyed it. And he felt that indeed, with all this wear that he had gotten out of that first piece of material, he had advertised himself beautifully. So one day, while he's thinking that, he's brushing the bow tie, and it just fell apart. And he sat down very reverently, and he looked at this little pile of threads, and he said, "Oh, well, this little pile of threads, there's nothing left of my original coat except this little pile of threads, just enough to make a story." And that's where I got the story to share with you.
Thank you. That is interesting. You know, that's what storytelling is all about. Now, I know that story a different way.